Hi, everyone. My name is Nikki Lively. I'm the clinical director of the Transitions to Parenthood program here at the Family Institute. And our program is a team of psychotherapists specializing in reproductive mental health, and we provide therapy and support to women, men, infants, couples, and families during the transition to parenthood. Today, I'll be talking to a mom about her experiences transitioning to motherhood. And full disclosure, this mom and I are good friends, and we've known each other for many years, but we've never had an opportunity really like this one to delve deeper into the psychological, physical, emotional, and spiritual transition that she recently went through. And I think this developmental stage of adulthood that's been called matrescence, which was a term coined by the anthropologist Dana Raphael, is kind of a misunderstood and not really a developmental period that's talked about nearly enough. In fact, Sarah and I were just saying we'd never heard this term before recently. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to explore matrescence with Sarah today. Let's talk about matrescence, which for many women will start with a pregnancy. On a psychological level, if you recall when the pregnancy started to feel real to you?
Maybe it became most real when you start to show, and then really when you feel the kicking, that was like, whoa, this is crazy. So there was that kind of period of just wonder, you know, of just like, wow, this is such an amazing process and stuff. And then as you get towards the end of your pregnancy, then things are just uncomfortable. So I think anyone who's listening, just understanding that there's going to be a day where it all kind of crashes all at once. There's a transition where things start to turn off, and now your body's trying to figure out, okay, now we're dealing with this kind of chemical makeup now and stuff. So
it's one of those things you just do not realize until you're in those shoes of like what's going on. And I think one of the things with social media is that moms are often putting out there like, my life has changed. I've never felt love like this before. I cannot believe I have had life without this. All these magical, wonderful, it's like a Disney movie. For me, like I didn't have that. And it's almost like that's where the pressure was like, I don't feel that. And so is there something wrong with me? You know? So that's kind of the crux of it. It's when you don't feel the way that everyone else is saying that they feel. But I think come to find out, a lot more moms probably feel that way. It's just not allowed to be talked about. So I think that was the journey for me, was this is hard and this is very different. So I was 42 when I had her. So I was an older mom as well. And so thinking, you know, this is something I always thought I would be a mom, and now it's here, and now it's this. It's just so many different feelings to it all.
Yeah, I think that's part of why we're doing this interview, because it is that pressure or the should, I guess, of how a new mom feels is just not realistic. It's not multidimensional the way it needs to be. Yeah. So I'm curious about what it was like for you when you first got home with Cece, how she adapted, how you adapted, and the family adapted to her being home.
So I'm a big love my sleep. And I knew that was going to, I was scared about that because I really do treasure my sleep. What happened was for me, I started to fixate on it, and I was reading everything I could about like, okay, well, how do you get them to nap? And like, when will she start sleeping longer and everything? As I would sit and hold her and feed her or something, or she'd nap in my arms, like I'd pull out my phone and I would Google sleeping and stuff. I was fixating on it. And so I was really getting stressed out about it. Also, so at 42, I had had a life where I built a career on being really good at managing things. And managing chaos and managing things so you don't get to chaos. I thought I could manage this, you know, and I could manage her to go to sleep and stuff. And that's kind of the one of the first things you learn. Maybe it took me a little longer, but you're actually just guiding her through her process of growing and her brain figuring it out and stuff. And it's like you can't control it. You can just guide it, and you just have to be there for her. I was never formally diagnosed, but I do think I had a lot of anxiety. And I've had anxiety issues in the past. And so I recognize that you know what? This is a lot. I think the one benefit of being older is like I had good self-awareness, you know? And so being able to judge, okay, well, this is happening. Do I think this is a moment of I need more help or can I get through this and stuff? And I think it was probably around between six and eight weeks, you know, I couldn't stay asleep and the anxiety. It was just a lot of thinking about I should be doing this, I should do this, I should do this, I should do this, and fixating on things. And so I talked to my doctor then, and so I started medication. And I think that really helped me, like, to get things calm. It's tough, but it does get better. But I say that first 6 months can be, it's a wild ride of, you know, things changing every few weeks and all kinds of stuff, so...
I think I just wanted to go back to that article that gave us the term matrescence.
Yeah.
And just see if you had any thoughts about what I guess they're saying in this article, the authors, they've worked with a lot of new mothers and they're saying every story is unique, like you just said, mm-hmm. but that there's some universal aspects to the sort of psychological narrative of yeah. matrescence. So curious what you thought about these themes. The first one that they cite is ambivalence, mm-hmm. that being a mom is neither good or bad. It's both good and bad. And just wondering if that fit with your experience or what aspects of your life as a new mom that you felt or do feel ambivalent about.
Yes, I agree with that. I think the good part are, you know, when she smiles and when she laughs and now she's starting to talk and, you know, when she started walking, when she started crawling, when the development is happening and when you see her learning and seeing her brain figure things out and stuff, it's that. It's watching her grow and become this person is the good and makes you smile and laugh. And also how much joy she brings to other people. That's just fills me up so much, you know, that she's such a gift to all of us. Mm-hmm. That's the fun part. The bad part is all the work. Moving on to solids. It's like, oh no, I got to figure out what food she has to eat and like, you know.
Well, so the other theme that they cite as part of matrescence is trying to integrate the fantasy of motherhood that a woman might hold before she becomes a mom and then the reality. And that, you know, these things are informed by lots of stuff, like anything she observed in her life from other relatives, yeah. certainly social media, friends, community culture, etc., that kind of inform fantasies. So I'm curious if you had any fantasies of motherhood and how you reconciled those.
I mean, fantasies, for me, I loved dreaming about having a child and being able to teach that child and, you know, watch them grow into a good person. It was never like in my dream about like, oh, having a baby and, you know, like I never dreamed about that part. It was that being able to give someone love and guidance. That's what I would think about. And the reality of motherhood, I just think it's, I find it kind of ironic that, you know, I'm one of seven kids. I'm the youngest or eight kids. And we're all about a year apart. And then I have siblings who have kids. And so I wasn't exposed to that every day with their kids, but I pride myself and I think I'm a pretty empathetic person, but that like I never really empathized with my sisters who had kids and like truly empathized about like how much work, because there's kind of the frame of reference is just so hard, you know, and just how constant that work is.
One of the other universal themes they found was guilt, shame, and or struggles with accepting themselves as a quote-unquote good enough mother, which in my field, there's a psychoanalyst, he's deceased now, but he's sort of famous in my field. His name is Donald Winnicott, and he's the one who came up with these terms. He called it the ordinary devoted mother and the good enough mother. He was, I think, really trying to essentially normalize that most parents are just fine. However, a lot of moms I work with in psychotherapy and respond on the internet and things like that to the idea of good enough feels like not good enough. Curious like how you've dealt with accepting yourself as a mom and what you have to offer to Cece.
Like I have those moments of, am I good enough? Or like, oh, you know, she didn't have enough vegetables. You know, and the other funny thing with us is that
we're so much in a routine that when we get home from work, we take care of her first. So we feed her and we bathe her and then we put her to bed and then we eat ourselves. I have moments of that, but I think I'm a little bit more forgiving of myself. I think for sure as I listen to friends who have older kids and stuff and as their social lives and stuff, I feel like it almost gets harder. You know, it's just different. It's a different kind of hard the older they get and stuff. So I feel like right now it's just making sure she's fed and has a clean diaper and love, that she feels good and safe. And I'm going to guess that that's probably going to be, you know, a lot more complex the older she gets and stuff. So but yeah, there is a kind of element of forgiving yourself. She's not judging you, so don't judge yourself.
So the other universal theme is this idea of motherhood being intergenerational. Mm-hmm. And I actually, this isn't on here. I actually read an article once. It was a research study about how a woman's voice, it sounds like her own mother's voice. Yeah. So there's like this inevitable kind of identification with one's own, whoever your caregiver was, whoever helped raise you, that kind of influences your identity shaping as a mom.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you have someone in your family, whether it was your mom or someone else, that might have influenced your style of mothering, and if anything surprised you about your similarity or difference from your own mother now that you're a mom.
So my mom is the bee's knees. She has 8 children, and I still can't believe to this day that how she did it. You know, when I was in that first couple months when it was calling her every day and crying and stuff, she was telling me, stop reading, like put the books away, just follow your gut. And she would say, that's what my mom told me. We had one book, you know, when it was Dr. Spock. She just talked about, like, we didn't have all this stuff and all these research and everything. We just went by our gut, you know, and she had to say that to me quite a few times, but it starts to sink in. You realize humanity has existed for hundreds and thousands of years, and so I'll figure this out.
The very last theme that they note in this article is that there's a process of learning to cope with what they called competition for your time, energy, and resources. There's a quote from the article. It says, your friends and family, including your spouse or partner, will be competing for your attention with your baby. Motherhood itself will also compete with the time, energy, and resources you've used to invest into your own eating, exercise, recreation, organization, sexuality, finances, and work. You'll have to navigate a shift in your role and relationship to all these people, places, and yourself. So I'm curious if that fits with what you've experienced, and if so, what's been the toughest set, I guess, of things to manage in the competition?
So I laugh because I am just so right in the thick of this right now, because I feel like we've gotten to a good rhythm. We have things kind of set and kind of know what to expect, you know, for the most part. It's not as chaotic as it was when she was a baby, but now I find that I have thoughts about, I cannot remember the last time I had 24 hours to myself. And this is where I feel, this may be where I feel guilty and I feel selfish. I don't have any answers to this other than I'm at a point where it's like, I gotta start taking care of myself. It's funny because there's just constant messages about this to moms of like, you have to put yourself a priority and you can't forget about yourself, and how it's so easy to get stuck in that though. Because I think for a few months now, I think I told my husband, like, I think I'm gonna plan a weekend away. And he's like, yeah, totally. But stuff comes up. It's so easy to deprioritize it and like, oh, okay, I'll figure it out later or something like that. And so I'm at this moment of like, I can see I'm not my best self or my most giving self. I'm at a time of just going through the routine so I can get through it. Because it is. It's like I feel tired. Like I don't eat well. Like it's all kind of making me feel I got to take care of myself more. It's just hard. I did have a life, you know, before all this happened. And I think that's what made me interesting and made me who I am. I shouldn't feel bad about continuing to cultivate that, but it's hard.
I guess I'm wondering if there's any other thing that you learned during this period that you either wish you had known, or just anything you haven't shared so far that you think, gosh, I wish someone would have pulled me aside and told me this, or I would have loved to have known this.
I mean, the big thing for me is that it's okay to feel more overwhelmed than magically inspired. I think the other thing is that the newborn stage and that baby stage is a series of phases that constantly change. And so as you will figure out a phase, it will quickly change into something else. Just be aware of that, and that that's all normal.
I think you've shared a lot of really important insights. So thanks for sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by the Family Institute at Northwestern University, a nationally recognized leader in the field of behavioral health. We bring together the right partners to support children, adults, couples, and families across the lifespan. As researchers, educators, and therapists, we work with our clients and partner to see change. If you'd like to request an appointment, please call us at 847-733-4300, extension 263. You may also visit our website at family-institute.org. And please follow us on Facebook and Twitter for relationship tips and tools and for updates on new podcast episodes. Thanks so much for listening.